Hi, everybody, and you're very welcome back to another episode of Hard Truth with myself, David Vance, and Alana Mercer.
Hi, David. Wonderful.
Hi, Alana.
Hi.
Great to see you as well. And hey, Alana, we our podcast, or these podcast video thingies that we do, we had a very good week over on Rumble last week, so I'm sure we want to thank all our Rumble supporters and followers over there. Thanks very much for watching our material, and whether you're watching it in Rumble or anywhere else, or whether you're listening with it, do what we need you to do. Hit the subscribe button so you can get obviously updates from all our material that we put out here on the Hard Truth channel. So yeah, that was good, Alana, wasn't it?
Yes, it was. We did really well, and of course thanking our viewers and our supporters, and hopefully we get more of you hooked.
Well, we need to be, you know, I do honestly believe we are in an information war where we're trying to fight back against deep tech. I think some of the terms you use, Taliban, tube, and whatnot. We have a real battle on our hands, and so much that passes in the mainstream media, it's irrelevant, it's trivial, it's not substantive. And at least I think the thing we're genuinely trying to do, Alana, is to bring focus and real thought on pretty much all the big issues of the day. And that actually brings us till tonight. So, yeah, for tonight. So, okay, folks. So on this one here, I want to paint the scene in this one. So, in the first instance, I think along with pretty much all of you watching this, Alana and myself watch the stuff that's been going on around the world over the last, let's say, 18 months in particular, and the Anglosphere and specifically, and we see what can only be called, Alana, you know, authoritarian bullying on a scale that I never have witnessed in sort of in my life. Places like Australia at the moment, it's shocking what's going on down in Australia. New Zealand, shocking. UK, not great. Canada, not sure about what you think about Canada, but Justin doesn't look to be a very benevolent dictator to me. And then you've got, of course, Biden in the land of the free, also being increasingly authoritarian. Isn't that correct?
Yes, and if we are to believe the surveys, and of course the line, the defensive line from conservatives is always, oh, I don't believe that those surveys. Okay, fine, but apparently, you know, sampling is always very weird. They never predicted Trump's election, so on and so forth. But if we are to believe some surveys, at least 50% of the population is down with this.
Yeah.
What do you think about that? I mean, let's not pretend this is happening in a vacuum whereby the government is acting upon a defiant population. There are pockets of defiance. Can we hold them? I don't know, because the majority seem to be quite fine with what's happening.
I think you're absolutely right, Alana. I think, you know, in the States, it may be 50-50. I think in places like the UK, it's much more like 80-20 or maybe 90-10, I fear.
What about Australia?
Well, you know, honestly, I mean, I keep watching the scenes coming. Have you been to Australia?
No. I'd love to.
So I travelled extensively around Australia about 5 or 6 years ago, and it's an amazing country. And, you know, it does have that kind of curious little heritage, because obviously Britain decided to use it as a penal colony. And ironically, that's what it's ended up as again. I could never have believed that the people, they're pretty rugged people down in Australia. A lot of respect, but like South Africans, they're I thought they were really tough people, you know, and to see them cave is really, honestly, Alana, these things take my breath away. And New Zealand, of course, little better. So you make a good point. It's not just the authoritarian governments, it's the complacent sheeple. It is, isn't it? The people who...
Yes, and I think underlying it, the subterfuge is a deep change in the population, whether it's a result of education. I mean, we're going to talk about Christianity, and I think we're at loggerheads here. I seem to I know he's been much maligned, Edward Gibbon, because he, when he wrote the history of the decline and fall of the Roman Empire, I only read the abridged version, the modern version published in 1943. I would love to at least read the chapter in the 12-volume series about the fall of Christianity, the fall of Rome, attributed to Christianity. And that's sort of, it's a huge topic to tackle, but I think it's a very interesting thesis. Dr. Samuel Johnson's biographer, Boswell, was so infuriated by this audacity. And Gibbon was a practicing, what was his, he was professed Church of England. So he was, but Boswell called him an infidel wasp. I love that. Probably being cancelled today for saying such things. But the fun with language, of course, Dr. Samuel Johnson's biographer, so of course, but he was furious with Gibbon for this thesis linking the rise of Christianity with the fall of the empire.
Well, you see, folks, this is what sort of brought us, Alana and I, together on this topic, because I keep saying that I feel like I live in the final days of Rome. I honestly do believe that. There's something about our civilization that's decaying. I see things on a daily basis, Alana, that horrify me culturally, across the board. And so it does make me think, and one of my joys it has been, I've always been fascinated by the Roman Empire, and I've read a lot about about what happened Rome all the way through, and it's such a brilliant history. And Edward Gibbon did an amazingly good job, Alana. So we've got putting that on the record straight away, regardless of what Boswell felt about it or otherwise. I can remember a few years ago now, maybe 3 years ago, I went to Croatia. And in Croatia, the particular place I was staying was where the last Roman emperor, who I think was last one, he built his palace there. And the ruin, actually amazingly good architecture, the ruins are there, but it's still an impressive building. And I remember sitting there and thinking, so how did it come to this? How did mighty Rome end in this way? I thought that several years ago. And now, after what I've seen for the past 18 months and across the world, but particularly in the Anglosphere, I'm asking the same question. How have we ended like this? So that brings us to you, Alana.
And David, look who's leading the demise in America. It's a class, almost a sanctified criminal class, the Black Lives Matter, criminal in thought. Because when you go on television, as was as happened yesterday, I saw a clip of a gentleman who believes he's a scholar and academic and says that critical race theory, designating whites as the devil with little drawings for kids in books, we've allowed that, is an intellectual endeavor, and he was talking to a mother, a lady who's, the native population, Caucasians, cannot lead this because of this sheepishness. They are incapable of forging ahead and leading a revolt. So it's left to people who are proper, who are politically proper and polite. Like, this is a lady who's a Muslim mom. She's absolutely Americanized, and she speaks with us. I love her because she's doing the work of the Lord. But it's this cutesy. It's not an intellectual language. It's cutesy. I'm a mama bear. Oh, fuck off. Sorry. I'm a mama bear. I mean, such childish language, you know, the sort of, I'm not a terrorist, I'm a mama bear. Anyhow, she is leading the battle against this absolute propagandizing and worse, this toxic atmosphere in schools. And this gentleman that came, typical of this whole class of people that has arisen to dominate the what I call the intellectual means of production, he said to her, with no shame from the mediating white CNN anchor, he said to her, we learn this stuff in the university, in this rarefied, he didn't use the word rarefied, he couldn't, atmosphere, and he said to her, we are dealing with parents who are not intelligent enough. They don't have the intellectual wherewithal. He did not say those words. They are not intelligent enough to understand these things. We have to transmit them to the kids, and you must leave us to it. So someone, David, has cultivated, there's no point focusing ire on this gentleman who's typical of the people who are spreading this poison that's bringing everything down, that's sucking everything into a black hole. Someone has created a bogus field of endeavor in the university called black studies or critical race theory, or which is anti-intellectual, if not sub-intellectual, and doesn't conform to any field of study. It's a politicized construct that simply rapes reality for a feel-good outcome. Someone has brought this has created these entire university departments. Someone is recruiting into the university only based on their requirements. And so this is a thuggery, an intellectual thuggery that we've created. Criminal class, except they've been imbued, and it's very dangerous when you imbue very stupid people with dangerous ideology. Yeah. It's just like they say fascism, the argument from Hitler. Yeah, it's the same thing.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. When you give stupid people that kind of power, things go very bad. But the core argument is then, what impact, if any, has Christianity had in terms of weakening and undermining? And I don't want to spend all night talking about what happened to Rome, because I'm more concerned about what's happening to us, is what's happening to us. But, yes. I know Gibbon, the argument that the analysis that he put forward, and as I have said to you before, I can see different perspectives on this, to be honest. And so I've said to you, I could have 50% go with it. But I also think that, for example, the Roman Empire didn't fall. It split in two, and the eastern part, as you know, carried on for about 1,000 years. And Rome was reoccupied after the Vandals and Goths had Visigoths had occupied. It was reconquered a couple hundred years later. For me, what happened, Alana, with Rome was, and it's classic empire stuff, because it happened to us. It happened to the Brits as well. What happens with empires is they overextend. Rome overextended it massively geographically, went beyond its capabilities, its supply lines, and all that kind of stuff. And it did, therefore, invite a form of collapse on itself. Britain did exactly the same. Well, the British Empire was bigger than the Roman Empire, but it collapsed because ultimately ran out of money trying to fight a Second World War. For me, there is an issue of overreaching in terms of the Roman Empire.
Yeah, we saw that with Afghanistan and what's
it's exactly the same.
David, it's easy when you see the intellectual and moral rot, the inversion of morality that Christianity bequeathed. Doctrinaire Christianity has very clear morality. When you see the inversion of that, and I don't think we've quite said what Gibbons's argument was. And just as phrased by the American author Wilson Whitman, who wrote the foreword to the 1943 abridged version, the only one I've read, he says, among, these are his words, not mine, please, Southern Poverty Law Center, I'm on the list already. Among these reasons, Gibbon noted that Christianity attracted to its common tables slaves, women, reformed criminals, and other persons of small importance. Whitman's words, not Mercer's words. In short, that Christianity was a people's movement of low social origins, rising as the people rose. His words, not mine. Christianity, my words now, as Christianity might be called the social justice movement of its day. So don't you think, by making religion so available, so almost anybody can join it. I mean, to become a Jew is hard. It really is hard. Anyone can become a Christian, and you can even kill and say you're confessed and you will be forgiven. There's certain, and also you know about, I shouldn't speak about the fundamentals of Christianity, opening it to everybody, making it unconditional, isn't turning the other cheek a fundamental thing in the Bible, no less?
Well, you see, there's a lot of stuff you've thrown there. So let's revisit some elements of that. You know, for example, you talk about the kind of the meek and mildness, the turning the other cheek of Christianity. I don't think the Crusaders were too much into turning the other cheek. Do you?
We do have to look at reality, and that's what we must do now. Look at is this associated with certain mindset or practices or the church having embraced the other and abnegated the followers? When you hear priests speak, nobody goes to the rescue of imperiled Christian. The Pope doesn't speak of it. All he speaks of is the other, subjugating yourself to the other, washing his feet. This comes from Christianity, has to surely.
I think it comes from the collapse of Christianity. That's what I think. I think if you take the Pope, for example, and with no offense to my Roman Catholic friends, there's a cultural Marxist sitting in the Vatican, as far as I'm concerned, this most recent one. And actually quite a contrast from some of his predecessors.
I love Benedict, and I think he couldn't. He saw what was happening. Yeah. He saw what was happening.
Yeah, that's right. So for me, Alana, that I think that the collapse of Christianity is one of the big factors. And that collapse has been coming for about, I would argue, maybe 100 years. So it's not just been overnight. But the speed, Alana, in recent decades, certainly during our lives, is kind of stunning. I remember the Christianity of when I was a child in the 60s. And I look at it now, and honestly, it's just not—it's not recognizable, and it's not worthy, and it's not fit for purpose, and it doesn't educate. It doesn't provide, I believe, young people with the muscularity that they need to cope with the stuff that we find going on right now, where we're being told, you know, stay indoors, don't go out, obey this, obey that, and the other. Well, no. And the biggest sin for me, the biggest sin of all, Alana, which really bothers me, is Christian churches have gone along with this for the last 18 months. If they had any guts, every one of them would have turned around and said no. But they don't. Yeah. So that's why I have sympathy with what you say, because those people don't reflect me. That Christianity isn't my Christianity. But ultimately, and it's not fit for purpose.
How many people or prelates your spiritual leaders, how many of them have stuck to your doctrinaire Christianity? And no. I just can't help thinking that Christianity, if I think of the rabbis in Israel, I think it gives me quite an indication. If I think of the rabbis in America, and I think of the rabbis in Israel, those hardcore people, I have to say, I know that in places where I write, everything is blamed on the Jews, but I see it as the opposite. The rabbis have embraced a sort of pop religion and a social justice kind of inclined religion. And just like their Christian friends, they've been eager to bring religion in line with self-help, leftist, spiritual, political hobby horses. And this has been happening when the self-help movement evangelized in America, I don't know, 100 years ago or so. Christianity was sort of conflated with a whole self-help movement. And I see rabbis are just like that. They speak nonsense. They have absolutely no authentic Hebraic tradition. And I have to remember my father, who is a scholar, a rabbinical scholar, and a very controversial man. He died last year. And whenever an American rabbi would come to Johannesburg to replace this or the other, he would say, Oi, one of those ignorant loudmouths. They're so charismatic. They speak all the women swoon, but they know nothing. They know nothing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's so true of so many Christian pastors as well. I'm afraid, you know. So that's a deep-seated rot, Alana. And it not only doesn't serve us well, but it does bring us back then, I think, to what were pre-end of the Roman Empire times, where again there had been a rot set in actually for a couple hundred years before the Roman Empire fell. That rot set in with us. And the thing that really scares me is just how quickly empires can collapse. And this modern one that you and I talk about every week, it's collapsing all over the place. And it is right to say that we should ask these questions. I mean, does Christianity contribute to that collapse? I would say in some ways it does, but I don't recognize that as Christianity anymore. I recognize it as a fake, as you say, a pop Christianity, a pop version of something that is much more serious.
I'll challenge you some more. I mean, in Deuteronomy, an early book in the Torah, you know, there's an advanced concept of social justice. There are instructions to protect the poor, the weak, the defenseless, feed the animals first, the widows, the orphans, aliens, so on and so forth. But nowhere does it say, as it does, as I understand Christianity, to turn the other cheek, you know, welcome your enemy into your home or the foreigner into your home, let them walk over you, outnumber you, even kill you if the prophet moves them. So that's not in the Hebrew Bible that I know, and it's not in Judaism. And I can't help thinking that something of that has translated into what we see. You've pointed out a very good point about why Israel is so firm about its borders, and it does have threats to its borders. And we are not. How do you explain that? Isn't there the injunction to turn the other cheek, love? Then in Judaism, you have justice above all. You have to do justice to your enemy, and you have to perform all these things for the poor, the widow, etc. And so even the animals, there are injunctions. Feed your livestock before yourself. However, we do not have the injunction to love the other more than ourselves.
Okay. First of all, I think it was last week or the other week we were talking, you described yourself as an Old Testament kind of gal. There is so much in the Old Testament, as we call it, that I respect.
Reminds me of Monty Python. Let's have us a stoning. Where's your bag of gravel?
so that's the first thing. But in the second thing, and this is a serious point, and you just raised it there. I think when institutions become comfortable and become powerful and become dominant, they become rotten as well. And Christianity, unlike, for example, what happened to Jewish people in the last century, Jewish people had to go to Israel to find somewhere to survive, Alana. It was a return to Israel to survive. That has not been something that Christians, mostly speaking, have had to fit. Now, I know in some African nations at the moment, they're in peril and whatnot. But by and large, in the West, in the Anglosphere, everyone's been comfortable for such a long time. And that's what brings me to the likes of Poland, for example. And I've talked to you about this, the fact that I see a form of, if you like, a Christianity, the muscular Christianity, which it's really interesting because, I mean, they had Christianity there. They were crushed by communism. They've reemerged from communism and they've come out of it. And they're standing up for what I would see as the values that you and I, and maybe many people watching this, would support. You know, the family, national sovereignty. They will control who come into their country. They support, having families growing and mums and dads having babies. Actually, all of these things have been killed off in elsewhere. So, but they've emerged from, Alana, the long shadow of communism. And therefore, I wonder, does that make their form of Christianity somehow more, rather like the Jewishness in Israel? It's existential, and they're not prepared to let it go the way we are.
Do you think that I am praying for Hungary and Poland, even Estonia, but do you think they're going to resist, first of all, the parties often led by women? I've seen strident women on the BBC speak that they malign the nationalist leaders now in power.
Yep.
And as I say, here in the United States, you can see the women control the intellectual debate. Intellectual, I won't call it that. I mean, whether it's COVID, critical race theory, domineering, authoritarian, in the name of I don't think they can even claim liberty in the name of liberty, but in the name of equality. Equity and equality, they are the levelers. They are the levelers of society. And I fear for Hungary. The EU is going to put pressure. Not a wealthy nation. They're very precarious. I agree that it's a muscular Christianity and probably supported quite well within Hungary and Poland. But there's opposition, and I don't want it to sprout conspiracy, but it's strongly supported from the United States, the opposition, right?
Absolutely.
A color revolution is brewing, courtesy of the United States.
As has happened in so many other places as well. You're absolutely right, Alana, but I share your concern, because I look at the European Union and other supranational bodies like the United Nations and whatnot, and they do not want to see that which we are happy to witness in Poland and Hungary. They don't like that at all. So the political leaders of those countries are in constant peril. And like you, I fear that they will be taken down and be replaced by creatures the same as those in the other parts of, for example, the European Union. So
But do you think taking them down, there'll be the pressure from the EU funding? Do you want to join? Do you want the aid? But from the United States will come the putsch or the coup. And we need to state that. I mean, when we talk about foreign interference, it's a joke. We are in 140 countries physically, and the Democrat Party and the Republican Party have active pro-democracy movements that are designed to undermine national sovereignty.
Oh, you're absolutely right. And actually, Alana, that's a show in itself, actually, because... And again, it's a hard truth that's not really been put out there very much. I think more commonly understood, the disastrous impacts that the U.S. has cultivated. I mean, we talked about one a few weeks ago. I mean, Afghanistan. That was just one. We could talk about Iran. We could talk about many places where the U.S. has worked to undermine and bring down things that it didn't like. And so I agree with you. Hungary and Poland are under existential threat. Here's the problem: if they fall, then it's gone. Then we really are in the last days of Rome, because there's no resistance. There's nobody standing up for borders, for sovereignty, for any of those. Nobody doing it. It's gone then.
And so ideologically, just like mothers are being designated domestic terrorists, and Trump voters and dissidents like you and I are. On the fringe legally, the whole legal apparatus has been turned against us, and we are afraid. The same thing is happening with these nations that are holding a muscular Christianity. You know, Tucker Carlson is the only one who spoke for Hungary in the West.
Yeah, because he went there.
Otherwise, he was maligned as a fascist. I mean, that's fascism. It is evil. It's really evil.
It is. It's a strange anomaly that the only part of Europe that has retained, if you like, that backbone, that moral backbone, is the part of Europe that was formerly communist. It's really, really interesting to think about why that might be. I think the thing is, those people who have lived under tyranny are much more vigorous in trying to oppose it. Those who haven't, and that's what we're, I think that's what we're seeing, Alana. You know,
are you seeing in your, if you, obviously you're closer to the ex-communist countries, do you see a gravitation back to Christianity, back to the Orthodox Church?
Oh, yeah, totally, see, yeah.
Because I know very radical anti-communists who've come from Russia, and they have imbibed the anti-religion. It's very powerful. It's very powerful, even among people who think like you and I do politically. The sentiment against the church is very powerful.
Yeah, well, I mean, there will be some who fall into that camp, but the people, I guess, I know, they would fall into they embrace what was their faith before. You know, yes. the sort of Stalin got to grips with them. So, and this is the lesson of history. I think that sometimes people don't recognize that, you know, your freedoms and your liberties, you cannot take them for granted, and you've got to have both the intellectual and indeed in some cases the physical ability to fight back. Otherwise, they're taken from you. And yet, I look at Canada.
That's key, David. That's key. These are our opposition. They are bullies. And I've watched them carefully. Once someone actually says, bring it, they work to cancel you, this and that. But if you stand up to a bully, they cower. They really do. And look at Israel. I really want to bring in this example about in 2018, about 10,000 Palestinians amassed on the border with Gaza. Gaza and Israel.
Yeah.
And I was amazed. Israel, I grew up in Israel, educated in Israel.
Yeah.
And we had this song we'd sing, the world's against us. Then it was patriotism. Now it's mostly left. The world is against us. Not to bother, not to worry, we'll overcome. But at least decades of resistance. I remember the United Nations would start every session condemning Israel, right?
Yeah,
they're still doing it, but nobody listens because Israel's just did its thing. And in fact, the economy, and you remember in 2018, what you and I would agree was probably excess force, they killed about 120 Palestinians on their border. The Palestinians were there explicitly to enter Israel and claim their homes from which they were dispossessed in 48. And what floored me, David, was the reaction of the Economist, liberal, pro-Palestinian, excellent weekly, but mostly leftist.
Yeah.
They pondered briefly, and they said every state has a right to defend itself. Now, they don't say that about the columns of Christ-like caravanners who are making their way, threatening to invade the United States with violence now. They don't say that about... invaders on our southwest, but in Israel has trained people basically saying, F you, we're going to do what we have to do. And in fact, the Economist reported that any Palestinian, no shame, I was shocked, even a farmer coming within 300 meters of the fence on Gaza is going to be shot. I mean, right. Israel gets away with this because it's just done this, put its head down. And then the Economist, leftist, liberal, pro-Palestinian, went on to say, yes, Israel must answer very nonchalantly. Israel must answer for the deaths in Gaza. Yes, it has to. But it is time for the Palestinians to take up genuine nonviolence. Essentially, they were saying, you know, stone throwing was cute when you were young, you know. It's time to get over. Struggle is getting a little tired. We don't do that. And you know what Israel now... I was shocked when I heard what Israel does on the border. I'm surprised it's legal internationally, but they don't care, and that has to be the attitude. They have auto-kill zones. Did you know that?
No.
So between Gaza on the border there, they have remote-controlled machine guns, ground sensors, and drones for 60, 70 kilometers of the border. And they've got these gizmos that are robo-snipers, right? So the 20 and 19-year-olds man these computers, and when the general says, push the kill button, They do it. Now, you and I are shocked. I mean, I'm not saying, it's pretty shocking. But this is happening on the Israeli border. There's live ammunition. If you cross, some commander will give the instruction eventually to release these gizmos.
But you see,
what do you think?
What I think is that that's how you protect your nation. That's what I think. What I think is if the U.S. applied that mentality on its southern border in some way, then that would show that the U.S. is serious about protecting itself as a sovereign state. It's not. The U.S. isn't serious about protecting itself as a sovereign state anymore, nor is the U.K. We're fundamentally frivolous. That frivolity is not one that Israel can afford. Because if you tried that, you'd be gone. And this is the whole thing. It distills down to this. These fundamental truths doesn't it?
But is that because you're an island nation, you think you're protected? And why are we not imperiled by over 2 million people whom we don't know? I guess it's just because the powers that be don't care about communities that will be affected in all kinds of ways, including murders and robberies and schools that we score the last in the developed world. Our children do on reading, writing, and math. All these things. There's no, the allegiance of the Israeli government is still, however imperfect, to its people. The allegiance of the Anglosphere is to the other. It's almost like Laurence of Olivier complex, almost homoerotic love for the other.
But I think that's the cancer of progressiveness. That's the cancer of liberalism, the toxicity of that over many decades, maybe longer, going through all our institutions, and it's hollowed us out from within. We need to wrap this up very shortly, but just as a by, because this is really interesting. I did an interview with a chap the other evening. I put it out on a podcast.
You're cheating on me.
I'm cheating on you, Bob. I'm telling you in public, I'm cheating on you. And we had a chat about the immigration, the illegal immigration, Alana, that crosses the English Channel from France to the southern English shores. And this guy, he's basically videoed it. He's very active on the ground videoing it, showing that essentially there is what I call the tsunami of illegality crossing the English Channel. But we got to put things in proportion, and maybe this does bring us back to a good final point. The total number of people coming over this year, I think, is about, it's 17,000, right?
Yeah.
Now, okay, we are a smaller nation than the US, but to go back to your point, you've got millions that have been crossing. And Alana, at that point, that's the end of the American empire.
Well, the tipping point the tipping, because that it's been happening forever. And for the Republicans to pretend this did not happen, less so under Trump, we miss him now. We really do. But beforehand, Obama actually deported more than Trump, actually. Under Bush would wrestle a crocodile for an illegal alien, So this has been happening, and the tipping point has arrived. We see that in our politics, David, and it's tragic. And we see that in the total inversion of what used to be called by great conservative Russell Kirk, ordered liberty. It's disordered and illiberal.
Yeah, but just as, again, on a little kind of positive note to finish on as well, just as you say, like with Israel, and there's so much I admire about that innate understanding. This is about survival, so we're not messing about, and you've got to do the right things.
Yes, but, and on a muscular note, David, I agree we should end on that muscular note. It is not enough just to stand up and be ruined, because you and I, small actors, we will be ruined. One has to galvanize those lazy ponces. I love that English word. That lazy ponces whom we elect, they have to act on our behalf, and we cannot let them off the hook. Sean was telling me of some Bitcoin mogul who was, I was actually absolutely upset, who was taken off by YouTube. 2 million followers. Okay, he was taken off, and my husband's a follower of Bitcoin, all that.
Yep.
However, David, when my husband told me that, he made a few calls to Congress, Yeah, yeah. So he was somebody's acting on behalf of these sort of people, not on behalf of our speech. So we have to hold these parasites to account.
The first thing is to recognize them as parasites, and that's exactly what they are, and that's
to work for us and feed upon us.
Yeah, they absolutely do. Yeah. So whilst at least we recognize the perilous times in which we live, and I think, Alana, there's lots of contributory reasons for that, but they are very, very dangerous times, and all empires do collapse. And what I see in the United States is the collapse of the American empire, if you like. And if I look at Europe, I see it in a different way. It's slightly different, but what affects America affects the world, the rest of the world, you know. So that's why I think we need to talk about these things. So look, we've gone past our normal allotted time, so we're going to have to wrap this one up.
It's always such fun to have intelligent conversation with you, David, and also we can disagree, and we do that amicably and productively.
Yeah, I think the mark of a civilized person is you learn to disagree in an agreeable fashion, and so but ultimately I think the other thing is, if we can get this out to people, you watching this and, you know, all those folks who will hopefully listen to this as well, and if you reflect on what we're talking about, I mean, these are deep issues. It's not superficial, just media tripe. It's substantive, and actually, Alana, you know, there's no easy answers, but the starting point is having a decent analysis of where we are and how we've got here, and what options we face, you know. So that's what we try to do, I think. But anyway, that said, we're going to bring things to an end, folks. Thank you very much for being with Alana and myself.
Thank you all.
And we will be back next week, hopefully. We'll see you then. And that's, look forward to that. But thank you very much. Make sure you hit that subscribe button. And we will return next week with more Hard Truths.